Okay.
When you're preparing for the weather and the conditions, is the mental side of it more emphasized, or is it the physical, tangible parts of it?
What mental side of it? I don't know. I mean, we're practicing it. Whatever we practice in, sure, at some point we'll play in it. So, practicing everything this year. Hot, cold, windy, still, day, night, rain, whatever it is.
The coldest coldest game you recall that you've ever been a part of in your career?
There's been a few, but I don't think any of those really matter right now. Just trying to get ready for Baltimore.
Will you guys practice in the stadium again today?
We will.
Some guys talked yesterday about how the ball changes a little bit if it gets cold. Not to harp on the temperature, but how has Ryan Allen adjusted to punting in the cold? Are there differences there?
Yeah, he's been doing it for 2 years, so. Whatever it is, it is. We've seen it in games. We've seen it in practice. So nothing we can do about it. We just need to execute whatever we have in whatever conditions we're playing in. And we've practiced in all of them. So,
given that it's going to be a little bit warmer, marginally warmer perhaps on Saturday than it is today, did you consider practicing inside just from a health perspective?
Nope.
Colder.
Playing outside or practicing outside?
Their play action passing game seems like it puts a lot of stress on opposing defenses. I'm curious what you see from that aspect of their offense.
Yeah, they make a lot of big plays, absolutely. And they do a good job. They have a good running game. They complement those runs with the play actions. Flacco's very good at the deep balls and getting the ball down the field. They have, different combinations, deep routes, over routes. They use, a bunch of different receivers, tight ends, the wide outs, backs on checkdowns and misdirection plays, fullbacks, tight ends on, action that comes back against the flow of the play, stuff like that. So they do a lot of that, and they do it well.
For your linebackers specifically, obviously, I know everyone has to read, I guess, their keys, but for your linebackers specifically, is that the primary point of emphasis? Make sure you don't get sucked into the run play because they're apt to hit you on that?
Well, it could be. It depends on what the defense you're in is, what you're in, and it depends on what play they run. Some plays are the responsibility of it depends on what the coverage is and what the formation is and what the play is. It's not always the same guy. It's not always the same guy in the same play. That's why, practice is so important. We go out there and practice a play, and we have one defense called. But if we had another defense called and they ran the same play, then that's where the other guys say, okay, well, if we were in this other defense, then you would have this guy, you would have that guy, you would be the force guy, you would, whatever. I mean, we can't run the same play, against five different defenses. We just don't have enough plays in practice, not even close to that. So we have to be able to, recognize the play. But if we happen to be in a different call, it could change the assignments to totally change them. So, or if they flip sides on the play, then all the guys that saw it on this side now be seeing it on the other side. So that's, it's whoever's responsibility it is, that's who it is. But it could vary based on what we're in, what formation they run it out of, and what the actual play is.
Bill, along those lines, conceivably, if you're in man-to-man, should play action have any impact on the secondary, or should it be as effective as it would otherwise look like?
Yeah, that's a great question, Bob. I mean, in a way, no, but where the conflict comes is you still have to have run force in man-to-man coverage. You can't just play man-to-man and not account for the run responsibilities. So the conflict comes when you have and you try to avoid those conflicts, obviously. That's, defensively, you don't want to have, I'm responsible for this gap, but I've got to cover this guy over here. I mean, that's the recipe for disaster. So the responsibilities tie together, but, you know, your run responsibility and your pass responsibility, you know, when they're in conflict or when they're, you know, you're a step late on that, then, yeah, you got the guy in man coverage. But if you're, a step late covering him because you're trying to get to your run responsibility or vice versa, you're standing there waiting for the pass, but you're a step late getting to your run responsibility, then that creates seams in the run defense. So it's, you know, it's all those. But, I mean, that's the way it is on every play. I mean, doesn't matter who the opponent is. That's inherently the offensive and defensive, like, that's the battle. You know, offense is trying to get the defense to, if they stop one thing, they shouldn't be able to stop something else. And if, you know, we're trying to put this player, whoever it is, you know, in some kind of a conflict, and, you know, if we don't get him on this, we'll get him on that. Or here's what we think he's going to do, and we'll be able to get him on whatever the complementary play is. So, you know, it's obvious on a play like a reverse where, you're chasing the play down from the backside, and then that guy's got – but, you know, the same thing holds true on all the other positions, you know, in the interior part of the line as well. So, man-to-man, theoretically, everybody should be handled. It's the conflicts in the running game that potentially present a problem on that.
How much better have Jamie and Dante become in reading exactly that, you know, those reads between run and pass over the years? Because Vince said yesterday his trust in Jamie and in Dante is at an all-time high.
Yeah, well, again, it's one thing to be able to read and recognize those plays, and that's part of it. But the other part of it is playing with the guys around you. And when plays like that on play action happen, again, depending on what the call is and what you're in, how you're playing it, you know, a lot of times there's a, you know, passing back of receivers, or you're taking one guy, I'm taking the other guy, you know, type of thing, that as the play unfolds, that's the way you want to do it. So it's not just them seeing it themselves, but it's the other guy seeing it the same way and being able to have that communication, not verbal communication, just visual communication that, okay, like, here's what happens, this is how we're going to handle it. It's no different than the offensive line handling, you know, pass rush blitzes and stunts where, you know, guys cross that the lineman, you know, you can be doing the right thing, but if you're not all doing it right together, then there's going to be a problem. So it's that visual communication that is so important on handling those type of combination plays. So, and yeah, I think they've, but I wouldn't say that they have never been able to read those things. It's not like, you know, Hightower never saw play action passes at Alabama. I'm sure he saw more of them down there than he's seen in this league. But it's the defense. It's the handling of those things with other players and their teammates. No different than it is with, you know, linemen handling multiple, you know, four guys blocking four guys, but yeah, we got enough to block them, but we've got to be able to see it and handle it properly within those four guys.
So at the linebacker and safety level, who seems to be the most competent at covering some of the bigger targets would be playing in between the numbers and the hashes? Mosley and who, generally, I guess, would drive that?
For Baltimore?
For Baltimore.
Well, there are two off-the-line linebackers, there's Smith and Mosley. They are almost never on the line of scrimmage, and the other guys are almost always on the line of scrimmage. Suggs, McPhee, Upshaw, Doomerville, whatever you want to call him. So those guys play on the line, the linebackers play off the line, and they have a lot of coverage responsibility, but there's times where they switch it and they bring an inside guy and drop an outside guy, and of course the safeties, you know, they're a part of that too, again, depending on what the call is.
And how have they done? I mean, Mosley comes from, I mean, Dante's from that Alabama line where it was pretty good coverage.
Well, I mean, they have, you know, they have some plays that I'm sure Coach Pease is happy with, and I'm sure there's plays that Coach Pease is correcting, just like we all do.
Another Ravens question is, Yanda is obviously one of the better offensive linemen in the league. Mm-hmm. He has to move around because of personnel. We saw Logan have to do that last year, and it wasn't very much slip up. Is Yanda similar?
Yeah, but similar but different. You know, Yanda played right tackle at Iowa. The Ravens took him and have basically played him at guard. When he's played tackle, he's gone back to his kind of college right tackle position. He played a little bit of right tackle, I think, his rookie year. Maybe it was in training camp, whatever it was. Mankins was the reverse of that. Mankins played left tackle at Fresno, played guard, you know, light play tackle, and he worked at left tackle. But then eventually our tackle rotation was such that we didn't really need him at tackle until last year in the Baltimore game when he moved out the left tackle. So, yeah, kind of left tackle to left guard to left tackle to right guard to right tackle. Similar but different, yeah.
He won't be daunted by having really be, it's not like, as you said, some guys get screwed up having to move over one spot. Yeah, doesn't he seem to be like that?
No. I mean, Yanda's a good football player. I think you could put him anywhere. Just put him at center, put him at left guard, and put him wherever you want. But he's done a good job where he's been. I don't think they're looking to move him, but, I mean, I think probably you could put him at any position. He could certainly play right tackle, right guard, left guard. I'd probably play center, like Mankins could, too. I mean.
So what have you noticed from their fullback, Yusek, I think is how you pronounce it, you know, Harvard kid?
Thank you for pronouncing that. Yeah, you got me off the hook on that one.
Harvard kid, you know, so we obviously watch him play locally. I'm curious what you've seen from him and if it sort of looks the same as you would have thought, you know, from when you scouted him coming out.
I mean, he's been a productive player for him. I think he's the second most used fullback in the league in terms of number of plays. He also plays in the kicking game. You know, runs well, tough kid, blocks well. You know, they throw it to him. I mean, he catches it. I mean, he's not like a primary receiver, but I mean, the plays that they need to throw to him on, I mean, he can catch the ball. So he's, you know, a tough, you know, hard-nosed kid that plays in those and does a good job in those situations.
Pretty much what you saw or what you would have projected coming out of Harvard.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of what most fullbacks, we would, you know, I'd say kind of that's his position. You know, I don't think it's anything else. You know, he's not a running back. He's not a tight end. He's a fullback, like most fullbacks are fullbacks. So, but, you know, he does play in a kicking game for him, and he's, you know, same type of thing, runs fairly well, you know, plays with toughness. So he's shown up there too.
Yeah, with Doomerville being a rotational guy but also their leading sack guy, have teams attempted to go up-tempo and no huddle to keep him on the sideline much this year?
Yeah, they've seen some of that, and I think against a team like that, then they just end up rotating them in there. I mean, they have enough depth at that position, really at all the, they don't, you know, the inside linebackers rarely come off the field. Mosley and Smith, they're out there on every snap. The rest of those guys, you know, I think they're pretty comfortable with, I mean, Suggs is out there a lot, but he rotates a little bit too, but I think that they would just, you know, if they're getting no huddle, then they just would, you know, rotate and play 3-4 plays and then get, you know, McPhee in there, or, you know, same thing on the line with, you know, Canny and Jernigan, you know, Williams, Nada, who, you know, whoever it is, they just keep rolling them through. But the linebackers don't rotate, or I say rarely.
He seems a little bit, Doomerville, a little bit unique in terms of his size. Is he able to, I know he's a little undersized, but is he able to use that to his advantage at all, or what's made him effective in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say there's a few guys like that, you know. You know, you see guys like that in the league from time to time that are, you know, 15 sack guys that are, you know, six in that 6-foot range. But, yeah, he's quick. He's got a good edge rush. He's got good quickness to counter, and he uses his, let's say, leverage, you know, to be able to, you know, get under guys. And, you know, Freeney, I'm not saying he's Freeney, but, you know, Freeney was another, you know, shorter stature guy that was, you know, had great leverage and great explosion off the edge. And I'd say that's, you know, Elvis's strength is his explosion off the edge and his ability to use leverage and counter back inside.
Does your defense look different with Nata back in there?
Well, again, they have a lot of depth on the defensive line. They have a lot of big guys. So, I mean, he's a good football player. But, you know, they played well with him. They play well when he – I mean, they rotate him out in and out of there anyway. So, but, yeah, I mean, he's – look, he's a good player. He certainly, you know, is a guy they like to have on the field. Didn't want to give him a week off. I don't think we'd fight with him.
Bill, in what ways have you seen Tim Wright grow and develop the most since he's been here?
Probably just learning our system, which has, you know, been, say that's probably been the biggest thing for him, is just new terminology, let's say different, you know, he played receiver at Rutgers, he played tight end at Tampa, but I'd say that some of the things they did in the passing game, the type of routes, some of the techniques, some of the adjustments, just ours are a little bit different. So I'd say that's been probably the biggest thing for him.
Production that he's had so far, is that what you expected?
Well, I mean, I don't really expect anything until you start working with him. I think he's got good, you know, good skills, and he's certainly made some good plays for us this year, and I think there's still room for improvement. So, and he's, you know, I think he gets better on a daily basis. Things, I mean, he's a smart kid, and he understands and takes coaching well. But again, it's just there's a lot of volume, especially at that position. You know, he's involved in every play, protections, hots, you know, zone coverages, linebackers, sub defenses. So it's, you know, it's just a lot of volume.
What have you seen from Will Hill this year, and what has he brought to the Ravens defense?
You know, he's a physical guy that's given them. Let's say, you know, he's kind of the guy that they've used in some matchup situations. Like in New Orleans, San Diego, right? It's another one. So, you know, he's a guy that they've, you know, seemed to, you know, lean on a little bit. Now, you know, he got off the, obviously missed games early in the year, and it kind of has gradually, you know, worked his way in. You know, he's taken over really on the field on all three downs at this point, you know, last third of the season or so. But, you know, again, they used him in some matchup situations. Now he's out there all the time. So, you know, in sub defenses, they, you know, can still use him as a, you know, as a matchup guy. But they don't always do that. Sometimes they just leave him at safety and, you know, go with Smith and Mosley and whoever the nickelback is, Elam or Levine. So. Again, Dean changes that around a little bit depending on who they're playing and what the personnel group is and so forth. But he's definitely given them some, you know, good coverage plays against tight ends and no situation. Physical kid, good tackler.
Bill, with the amount of guys bad in the secondary of the season, how important has Devin's leadership been back there?
You know, the safety is an important communication position in any defense, certainly in our defense. So, you know, Devin always does a great job of that, but it's critical every year with, you know, new players, veteran players, doesn't make any difference. It's critical for the communication to start from the inside and work its way out to the perimeter with the safeties and the linebackers. But, you know, Devin does a good job on that. He studies. He's smart. He knows what, you know, what we're facing, how the teams are, you know, what their tendencies are, how the quarterbacks play, and he knows what we're doing. So it's important for him to be able to, you know, use the tools that we have to make the right adjustments or calls or whatever based on, you know, the situation. And he's done a good job of that. And he's a good communicator. He works well with whoever he's had back. You know, he's played with a lot of different guys and, you know, since he's been here, but he's always communicated well and worked well with those guys.
Bill, how much have you seen improvement in Chandler's overall game, Jones's overall game, particularly setting the edge on the rush and his responsibilities from his rookie year to now?
Oh, well, I think like any player, like most players, you know, big jump from year one to year two. But, you know, Chandler works hard. He, again, has a lot of versatility in his play, so he's able to help us in a lot of different ways. He's, you know, played inside, played outside on the edge, played up, played down, played some in coverage. So, you know, been a big guy for us in the field goal rush and that type of thing. So, you know, he contributes in a lot of different ways. So I think that versatility is, you know, key for him because he is smart and he can do different things for us. But just, you know, the basic fundamentals of his position, I think were, you know, good to begin with. And after a year, you know, he was able to take him at a pretty consistent level. And, you know, now there's always fine tuning that goes with it, but, you know, that's what it is. I think it's, you know, it's pretty solid.
Bill, it's been pointed out that no team has drawn more pass interference calls this season or since Flacco came into the league than the Ravens. Is that a result of the nature of their offense, taking more shots downfield on the edges, or is there some hidden, unknown art to drawing DPIs?
Well, I mean, part of it's You know, I think defenders with, you know, having guys behind them and interfering, part of it's, you know, the underthrown balls that the receivers come back for that the defenders interfere with. You know, Pittsburgh had one of those last week. I don't know how many interference, I'm trying to think of the interference calls that Pittsburgh has, had last week. They definitely had one. Oh, no, so was it two? Yeah, so, I mean, I think, you know, the underthrown balls are an issue, and then there's, you know, that was the personal foul on Mitchell. Wasn't really interference, it was just he hit the guy in the head, but it was the same thing. It was kind of, they were behind him, and, you know, he's running full speed to catch up, and it's hard to have the kind of body control when you're just, you know, running as fast as you can, trying to make up that ground, and so if anything happens, it's a little bit off of what, you know, the guy's expecting or where he's going for, then... You know, those are the kind of fouls you can get. But, yeah, I think their deep balls cause a lot of – they get a lot of penalties on those. I mean, more so than the five-yard crossing routes and stuff like that.
Bill, I know you guys are generally aware of officiating crews during the year and sort of their tendencies or what they've done. Does that make for a feeling out period in the postseason with these all-star crews that haven't worked together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like that every week. You can scout them all you want, but I think usually there's a certain point in the game that you can get a sense of this is kind of how the game's being called. So I think that's, no matter who the crew is, there's probably a certain element of that.
Is the defensive back on the outside virtually helpless on an underthrown ball when the receiver stops short and starts running back 90 degrees the other way?
No.
What's he supposed to do?
Turn and look for the ball.
Right. If you're running top speed and stop.
Well, the receiver you're covering slows down, right?
Well, he slows down.
Well, why is he slowing down?
For the ball.
Turn and look for the ball?
If you're running stride to stride with someone right on them.
When the guy slows down.
What if there is no slowdown? Is it stop?
Well, then he's not coming back for the ball. Then it's a back shoulder throw, and then you're going to, you know, try to match his hands and, you know, put your hands where his hands are on the back shoulder. But if you're chasing a guy and then all of a sudden you catch up to him as he slows down, I mean, why is he slowing down? That means the ball's about to be caught. That means you turn around and look for it. So if you turn around and look for it and then contact the receiver, then it's not a foul. If you keep running into him and you contact the receiver, then it's a foul. So...
turns, and you're still sometimes going to see that flag if it doesn't get around fast enough. I mean, it's a very difficult spot out there on those underthrown balls.
I mean, it's a technique thing. If you play the technique properly, then you're okay. If you don't play it properly, then it's going to be a foul. Back shoulder throws, I mean, that ball comes in a lot tighter. The receiver... He doesn't come back through the defender. He usually comes back behind the defender. The ball's behind him, and so the defender has to, you know, try to quickly turn and match where the receiver's hands are and try to get his hand in there, assuming he's looking at the receiver, which is usually the case. It's usually when the quarterback throws it. But if you're chasing a guy down the field and the guy slows down, then like why is he slowing down? I mean. Like, you're not that much faster than the other guy. I mean, it's really, you've got to see that space close and close quickly and then turn around and react to it.
There's some DBs that are kind of learning on the fly. In your experience, are there any common characteristics or skills that takes DBs longer to learn?
Who are you referring to?
Some of the young DBs for the Ravens.
Well, you should talk to Dean about that, or Steve, I don't know. Just trying to coach our team. I don't know.
Preparing for a team that does draw a certain amount of penalties, is it just an added emphasis for your players on, as you said, fundamentals? Or is there something as a coaching staff you guys can do to try to avoid that? I don't know if you, certain drills, or is it just...
Anything that's pertinent to that particular team could be drilled, sure. There's some particular thing that they do that maybe you haven't seen enough of or you want to emphasize. Yeah, sure. But, I mean, the rules are the same every week. There's no change in the rules.
do you feel like
your final question was
how often you practice and the conditions that you play in is as much of a home field advantage for you as say the crowd is?
I don't know, we can't control any of that, so I don't really care about it. I don't worry about it one way or the other. Whatever it is, can't control it. Okay, all right, yep, thanks.